You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. So we have Alan Pawlowski on the line, and I'm happy to announce that the most recent edition of Mission Matters, which Alan was an author in, was recently released. So today we'll talk about the book. We'll, of course, talk about what Alan is doing as president over at Pace Management. And so I guess just to get us kicked off, first off, Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. So I'm excited to get into your writing. I mean, it's been you have multiple tools that you gave to our readers, and now we'll also be bringing that content to our listening and viewing audiences as well. But just to get us kicked off, Alan, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Alan, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Alan, what mission matters to you?
My mission is to bring awareness and best practices to lower middle and middle market entrepreneurs when it comes to the whole buying and selling M&A divestiture world that is such an enigma to the smaller middle market business entrepreneur, demystifying some of the basic processes, explaining that it's not as mysterious as it may seem, and providing the value to my entrepreneurial network. Is my mission. I've serviced entrepreneurs for decades now as an advisor, and I've been an entrepreneur. I've had a few businesses. So I know from the entrepreneur side how anemic and what a drought it is to try to talk about these kinds of topics. Yeah. So it's my turn to give back to the other side.
It's awesome, Alan. And one of the reasons I'm excited to have you on the show is because mission-based entrepreneurs in the space that you're operating, so M&A and helping small businesses and middle market businesses to help them to succeed and to scale. I mean, I have some questions that were on my mind that I want to pick your brain with, sure. Or even at Mission Matters. I mean, that's the key. I like to say all our best ideas over here come from the guests. Let's see. So just to get us a little bit further in the conversation. So, like, where did all this start for entrepreneurship, helping entrepreneurs, M&A? Like, how did all that begin?
It wasn't a plan. It just sort of happened, truth be told. As long as I can remember, I wanted to have businesses. When I was a kid, I sold my mom's fruits and vegetables. When I was in my teens, I started working in the restaurant business. I started laying floor plans out on pieces of paper of my restaurant when I opened something up. And it was this unbridled passion for entrepreneurship, hardwired. My DNA, for some reason, drove me to that as long as I can remember. I had an opportunity in my late 20s to buy into my first business, which definitely just planted a seed for more buying and selling of businesses. Eventually, later in the career, I just started doing professional M&A services, having done it myself intermittently throughout the career. And it was the evolution. That's the 30-second story of 30 years.
Wow. I always grapple with this question. So meaning the idea of buying a business versus purchasing one or versus starting one from scratch. And as I look back and I'm like, okay, pros and cons of both, different models, different industries, different ways to look at this. But I feel like it's a tool that many entrepreneurs don't even consider as an option. Option. Maybe they've heard of, let's just say, franchise models per se, right? Yep. Like you've heard of, okay, and you think maybe restaurants, or you think like your local, maybe like shopping mall, right? Or mini mall. And you're thinking, oh, okay, like you buy into a franchise, like that's how it works. Mm-hmm. But the landscape of what it is to buy and sell businesses, especially thinking about some of maybe the business owners, family businesses, where the original founders are maybe aging out. Can you talk just a little bit more about like the landscape from your point of view?
Sure. I'll comment on all of those topics briefly. I think franchises are a great idea for somebody that has little or no background in business. They give you all the belts and suspenders, the marketing, all of the stuff to get your entrepreneurial itch scratched with the least amount of risk. You pay a fee for it, but one way or another, you're going to pay for marketing. One way or another, you're going to pay for IT, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah,
I quick comment on the whole franchise entry into entrepreneurship. Good. If you want to take it up a little notch in sophistication and not have to share your revenue with a third party, which is always nice. You can do a startup or you can acquire something. Startups are nice if you have a unique idea. Startups are hard, right? You have zero employees, you have zero customers, you have no cash flow, you have a lot of expenses out of the gates. So there's this wait to break even and then eventually break even. You got a great idea, it's worth it, but you're starting at square zero, right? So you got to kind of contemplate that. Buying a business, you're buying cash flow, you're buying employees, you're buying customers, you're buying a balance sheet. You're buying a lot of things by buying a business and some relative certainty of cash flows out of that business. So it should, if done properly, if modeled properly, it should be able to pay for itself over time with some kind of a savings and deposit put down. So what I do with clients and employees that are trying to decide between a startup and an acquisition is you can run a financial model both ways and do your assumptions of, you know, this is going to cost me this much and amortized over 8 years to buy it, or it's going to cost me this much to build it and these many years to break even, right? And you can sort of put some numbers to it, doing some analytics, and you can contrast an acquisition versus a startup pretty quickly. And to your last comment on succession planning and aging out, before the pandemic, businesses for sale was at an all-time high because of baby boomers aging out. And there's multiple exit strategies, right? To third parties, private equity, internally to family or management. There's all various ways of exiting a business, right? In different markets. But there was a gigantic supply pre-COVID. Post-COVID, it has just blown up because people are now fatiguing out.
Yeah.
Some people said that I got X in my savings accounts, but I really wanted Y before I call it quits in my career.
Yeah.
A lot of people were saying X is plenty. I'm not doing it anymore. So we're seeing a lot more, even more than pre-pandemic sell side activity. And on the buy side, the private equities kind of went on the shelf for a year and a half, right? And they're trying to buy businesses and create a portfolio and ultimately return on investment for you and I in our traditional investment portfolios.
Yeah.
So they had a year and a half of non-investing. So they're trying to catch up too. So we're seeing insanity on both buy and sell side. So it's a, I hate to use this word, but it's everywhere. Like, it's a frothy environment in M&A, but we're experiencing it for sure right now.
And so in my mind, I'm glad you brought us up to speed on what's happening now, because I was curious about the pandemic and how that affected everything. And I feel like, you know, it's similar in the business landscape to even some of the more traditional jobs, like even governmental work or things like that. Like, it's like maybe some people are taking, a lot of people, I would say, are retiring a little bit earlier than they thought they would. They're like, at first they were thinking, well, hey, I'm going to be, I love my job, I'm doing this forever. And then they're like, unfortunately, you know, they're like, I don't want to go back and do this after a bit, you know, I maybe like the new stage of my life I'm in for whatever reason. Right. Totally. So I'm not judging that, but me, this smells like opportunity. Like if you're out there and you're an entrepreneur, or if you're a would-be entrepreneur and you're thinking about starting a business, starting another one or acquiring another one, it sounds to me like there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Completely. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take a second and contrast organic and strategic growth of a business.
Yeah.
So organic growth is what we know, one customer at a time, one employee at a time. We know how hard it is, how much energy. Some good businesses monetize the actual expense to get another customer, right? And so it's hard. It's hard to get one customer, but over time you get them. It's hard to get one employee. I read a stat that you hire 2.3 people for every one position that you want to fill. We all hate hiring employees. It's just a challenge. Well, I do. I shouldn't speak for everybody listening. I hate hiring.
Wait a minute. For any of the employees at Mission Matters that are watching this, we love hiring employees. Here, Alan does not speak for us. And thanks, thank you for all your Mission hard Matters work. Go ahead, Alan. Put me
up. Apologies.
Come on, just setting me up here, man.
But so you look at organic growth and you're doing one customer, one employee at a time. And then you contrast it to strategic growth. And strategic growth, you're buying 100 customers and 20 employees at one time. Wow. With a relatively certain revenue stream that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So best practices are a combination of both. So that's, you know, some serious advice I give to any entrepreneur: at least contemplate acquisitions in this incredibly rich market that we have on the sell side. To your point, this whole discussion is, yes, it's an opportunity for entrepreneurs to grow their business far faster than one customer and one employee at a time, relatively certainly.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen many, and not to say one way is better than another, because I know different entrepreneurs have different goals, different objectives, but just to use my world and what I know, like marketing agencies, things like that. So I've seen certain founders that maybe I started out with who decided to, start and they built, one client at a time. They've got solid businesses and they've grown. And then I've seen, some other founders that maybe had that tool belt or had that tool in their tool belt of acquisition, who were able to scale and who were able to do things exactly like you said, where, they're bringing on all of a sudden an entire like thing. So maybe they only did, Facebook ads before, and then they bring on a media company and they or something else like that. Now they have a whole video department. And right. Sometimes there's some similarities there that that benefit the business. And there's a lift of from the customer bases. There's like usually a crossover there. So I've seen one where it's like, and again, just different routes for people, but one where they maybe grew pretty steadily and other ones where they just make these jumps. Like every couple of years, they have another acquisition and you see their revenue and you see the numbers. Oh, yeah. And over time, I mean, this doesn't happen overnight, but over time you just kind of see, and it's not, the word wouldn't be like, I don't know what the technical word is, definitely not exponential literally, but you see these big jumps in mm-hmm. revenue, I would say. And so there's two different routes there. I guess what I'm interested in, I'm also interested in this, I'm asking you this question also for me, Alan, mm-hmm. is what kind of like psychology for the founder or the owner group is necessary to kind of pursue that particular strategy? Because I think there's a mental mm-hmm. thing, there's a cultural thing, like to be able to successfully do that, like easier said than done. Like what are some of the mm-hmm. attributes of either, again, the founders, the ownership group, or whatever you would call it, that make that type of strategy like appropriate or even possible?
Great question.
Yeah. Over and above the money, of course, we know money and things like that. And we'll talk about that too, but I want to keep it on the psychology point for a moment.
Great. And money's absolutely a different topic, but
yep. I agree.
Gazelles has a program that talks about the evolution of the role of the business owner mm-hmm. from usually starting as a technician, right? Somebody yep. makes a good red sauce. They open up an Italian restaurant and they're a chef, right? And they're off and running. Now they want three locations. Well, they got to have some property management skills and some basic banking and finance skills. And they talk about the evolutions of the business ownership and the role of the business owner as the businesses grow. So the first psychological paradigm is, if you're not comfortable growing past a technician, hyperbolic or exponential growth, like you were referencing, may not be for you, because you're going to grow, the business will grow past your desire for what you want to do every day, or maybe your abilities to manage this thing. This starts growing at a tiger by the tail, or be willing to hire professional management, right? You can hire people that are experts in running businesses. You just won't be it. So assess whether you're going to be that person that has the appetite for an evolution in job description and ever more complex, complicated, and responsible, right? There's some greater responsibilities around the corner. Dynamic change for sure. And problem solving. Every acquisition, the first year is a big concentration for the acquirer. The integration, challenging, has to be thought about and planned ahead of time. Bombs are going to go off post-closing and during integration. Yeah. So the owner needs to have a lot of focus on that. That said, they have to have the job description at the acquirer in company that allows them to disconnect, right? They have the go fishing clause in place. They can leave for a month and go on vacation. The business runs appropriately. If you're at that level or almost at that level, start thinking about acquisitions, because those energies, your mind is going to need to be focused on the strategic elements of bringing these two together as seamlessly as possible and start capitalizing on the synergies that you were planning on at the beginning. So open-mindedness, some dynamics, a refocus on what your future is going to look like in the immediate future, and throughout your career as you keep doing these kind of growths in your business.
Yeah. Does that help? Oh, that helps tremendously. And when we get into pace management a little bit more, I'll share a story or two with you. So for the audience, hang on. but I do want to transition a bit here and I want to switch up the topic. So really excited about the recent release and the book that we authored together. So cool. Mission Matters, volume 6 of our Business Leader series. So First off, of course, congratulations. I mean, it was obviously an honor to publish you and to publish your work. And just to get us kicked off with this end of the discussion. So what was some of your inspiration behind behind the writing that you submitted? So the topic for operational tools for driving business value, like you could have picked any topic, obviously, to bring. And this is the one you chose. Like, why?
Yep. First, thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this. It has been a true pleasure. You and your team are top-notch professionals. If anybody wants to co-publish, I could not speak highly enough about Adam and his team at Mission Matters. They did a fine job. So that said, what I'm really passionate about, obviously M&A and the toe-in-the-water awareness of the M&A space, at least on the divestiture space, is understanding the value of your business. So how do you tie valuation into entrepreneurship? If I thought if I can create some tools that we can go early stage into an entrepreneur and they start thinking of the value, they start thinking about enterprise value and the growth of it in their decision-making process, that's leaps and bounds ahead of other businesses that all of a sudden call me one day and say, hey, I want to sell my business. I'm ready to go tomorrow. But
yeah,
you know what it's worth? You know, you worked on valuations. There's value drivers and value detractors, right? So get the mindset of enterprise value drivers early on as a tool for an entrepreneur. Bridges a chasm when the entrepreneur actually starts considering exit value.
Yeah.
And loosely applied to the buy side, when you go to look at something, you're aware of what value drivers and value detractors are on your target. So you can be a better assessor. You don't need to rely on your professionals to point out some of these strengths and weaknesses of an acquisition potential.
So this topic, first off, is near and dear to me because it always takes me back to my financial advisor days and remembering a couple of business owners that, you know, I was working from. And I wasn't obviously on the M&A side, so I was strictly managing their retirement assets, financial planning, cool. You know, so that kind of thing. And I remember, like, I was waiting for years for one particular entrepreneur for their exit. And I was thinking, I was, you know, always in front of them, developing a relationship, making sure that we were going to have a long-term partnership together and that we are a good fit to work with each other. And one of the things that, that, you know, happened at throughout this, and I always was kind of in front of him trying to figure out like what he's doing or how he's doing it. And I think this was earlier in my career. And I always wonder, like, I remember him bringing me a check at the end of settling it and saying, okay, Adam, like, all right, now what do we do? And I remember thinking, wow, all this time I've been going in front of you for like 2 years on your exit planning and you wouldn't talk to me other than just cordial conversations and, you know, thinking that I want your business. But I was trying to help you plan your exit strategy and to bring in somebody like yourself, Alan, who could help with the exit so that they'd get so that they would be able to do things like make the changes in their business necessary to over that last couple of years to maybe get the most value out of what they were going to sell for. So this individual, you know, in retrospect, not just on the tax side, the planning side, a lot of different things, lost a lot of value there. And I can't even imagine what he actually lost on because I didn't have your skill set of driving true business value and those drivers so that he could maximize the value for it. So the first thing I would say is how important is planning as you start getting towards the exit side of this? And how soon should a business owner start?
It's like medicine. Early detection or early awareness is everything. My most successful divestitures, exit strategies are usually when I'm working with people like your former self, Adam, the financial advisors. And let's say numbers meaning nothing. Let's say we want $5,000in our portfolio at age 65. And I want $5,000 in my business valuation by the time 65. And I have $10,000 to live on the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Add a couple zeros, clearly. But what if the portfolio you invest, you manage, and you sort of manage it daily? We all look at our poor returns these days on a reoccurring basis, but we're not measuring our business valuation many times. Mm-hmm. So what if your business is in your mind worth seven, you think you can sell it at a discount for five, but the reality is the market value is two or three. Mm-hmm. Now you've got your $5,000 working for you, but you only got two or 3,000 in the business valuation, but you're ready to go. Right?
Yeah.
But you still wanted that $10,000 to be the nest egg for retirement. Well, that's a pickle, right? Mm-hmm. So the earlier we can start, based on my four suggestions in the book, you guys can start getting a sense of what the business value is and the value drivers, and then start managing that with your financial advisor to what is that goal. And speaking to what I said earlier on the X and the Y, those are people that have awareness of what they want it to be at the exit, right? Now they're just compromising. They wanted that 7 million at the exit before. They'll take 5 million now. That's okay.
Yeah.
But it all comes with awareness and starting early in the process.
Yeah. And it hurts me because like most things in planning, it's like, but especially this one. So many of our business owners out there that are watching this, maybe you've been building that business over 10, 20, 30, 40 years, who knows? Or maybe it's a multi-generational business and you're second generation and maybe the third generation doesn't want to necessarily run the business anymore. Or maybe they've changed and maybe the kids aren't staying, you know, at home anymore or in the same towns anymore. And they don't necessarily want to work the business as maybe some previous generations. It was assumed that a child or, you know, family would take over the business. So all these things, you look at all this value that's been built up over many years and without the correct planning, so much of it's just left on the table. Now, obviously for the buyer, that's good for them. But right now I'm talking in two sides of that, right? A home, right? A home sale. Like there's two sides of that, but that's where my heart was at because I'm like, oh my gosh, like why all this value? Because the right planning wasn't done. Switching focus slightly here. I want to go, I know we kind of skirted the topic a little bit, but let's go further into pace management as we kind of dig further in this conversation. So first off, tell us a little bit more about your firm.
Pace started in 1997, helping minority businesses in the Maryland, Virginia corridor. I did MWDBE specialization. That was back when the necessary awareness for participations was starting to grow. And it was a wonderful dovetail to other businesses I had in the Central Atlantic States area. Mm-hmm. And as I would have been tied in different businesses, consulting was always a part of my life. Mm-hmm. But early stage, I was a single shingle, didn't have any help or staffs or relationships. As things grew and evolved, so did Pace Management. And I've got three different consulting companies. Pace is probably my lead one at this point in time. Yeah. But myself and the team do both buy side and sell side, lower middle market assistance to entrepreneurs buying and selling businesses, strategic growth through acquisition, right in our wheelhouse, early stage exit readiness or fix to sell kind of things. That's sort of a unique ballywick that we have because I have a couple strategic relationships with advisors that can come in and say, it's worth two now. We can get it to five by doing this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Or get it to four by doing this, this, and this. So we give our clients some options on potential value creation. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of unique in my space. It's usually more antiseptic. So we try to provide great value and some diverse value, but most importantly, with our moral compass always pointing north in all of our engagements.
Yeah. What type of companies, and whether it's size of company, whether it's industry, ownership group, I mean, what type of companies do you find get the most value out of working with you and your team? Like who's typically a good fit?
Non-public, clearly, and even pre-IPO is too big. So let's use revenue. Probably between 3 and 80 to 100 million is good. Yeah. And what we're most successful at are businesses that have at least 6, ideally 7 figures of EBITDA, which is earnings basically of the business. So once you get into a 7-figure $1 million plus EBITDA range, it opens up a whole different buying market. And we have a lot more opportunities to bring multiple people to the table on the sell side. The reverse is obviously for the buy side, but 3 to 100 million ish range, we can provide value many times.
Mm. And so, and on this end, I think through our conversation, we learned this, but I just want to be clear here. So you're working on the buy side, you're working on the sell side, you're helping kind of with that whole pipeline. Am I off on this?
Nope, that's exactly right. The processes are cousins, but they're disparate, clearly, right? We're creating a confidential memorandum, packet for sell side. Buy side, we're creating a target list of strategics that somehow make sense to the buyer. And it's there's a whole process for both sides of it. We manage both processes. I've got experts that handle the mechanics on both sides, different experts for both buy and sell side. And I do myself, I plug in usually a lot with the negotiations, deal structure, and some of the more strategic stuff, I guess, but between the two, buy and sell is well covered, but different processes for sure.
When somebody's kind of going down that line of thought of thinking about working with an M&A firm in general, what are some of the things they should be doing as they evaluate, you know, what type of firm is going to work best for them?
Sure. Great question. experience, clearly. Yeah. And accreditations, I'm a CMNAA accredited M&A advisor. Mm-hmm. That accreditation was a lot harder than I thought. and it was no gimme for sure.
Yeah.
But to get those accreditations, there is a, it creates a, an expectation for a standard. And I think, you know, without licensure, this industry doesn't have a licensure like a CPA or an attorney or, yeah. or the like, or financial planners. So making sure that there's experience and credibility there for sure. Mm-hmm. Two, maybe doesn't need to be many times, but maybe a background with the industry. We do a lot of machining, manufacturing, distribution. That's mm-hmm. I live in the Northeast, so that's my wheelhouse up here, right? So my background's in that. I don't have a lot of tech up here, right? On your side of the continent, a tech background would be important many times. So maybe some kind of background with what they do. Understand the processes that I just talked mm-hmm. about, that, you know, there is a process for both buy and sell side. And then referrals are always great, right? I don't market as much as I should. Hopefully that's going to change. But materially, all of our work comes from referrals from trusted advisors because the warm referrals really helps a lot. It just builds that initial trust, and then you just need to execute at that point in time.
It's awesome. And kind of looking at, for those that maybe have never worked with a firm, like, and I know this is going to be different, right? Whether they're buying, they're selling, mm-hmm. and size of company, goals, objectives, that everything's sure. going to be different. But broadly speaking, talk a little bit more about how the process works, just broadly speaking.
Yep. So each region, you're going to have some people that do this kind of thing, right? But you don't have to go to your region to do this kind of thing. Yeah. I've done multiple deals where I've never met my clients face-to-face. Zoom's great, right? But I've done deals on your coast. I've done San Francisco deals. I've done Italy deals. I've done Canada deals. So you don't physically need to be here to find strategic relationships and manage the legal and accounting, finance, and business aspects of a deal. So one, I would obviously check out my local credibility through my attorney or my accountant, or financial advisor is really a way to go. You know, the financial advisor world could buckle themselves with some credible M&A people. That's a good value added for the financial people. Mm-hmm. So start with your trusted professionals that you already have to see if they have a trusted professional that they can recommend. That litmus test is amazing. But make sure your trusted professionals are sort of in the M&A space. You don't want to go to a real property attorney and ask for an M&A suggestion, yeah. right? You want to go to a business attorney for an M&A suggestion, that kind of thing. So to your question, start with your immediate circle of professionals. Mm-hmm. Good old Google. If you're in a specialized industry, you know, M&A advisors for BioNTech, right? Or pick whatever yeah. your thing is. But do your own homework and see if there's somebody that really specializes out there. Do the interview process and then compare proposals, right? Because mm-hmm. there's a narrow lane in standardization mm-hmm. for fees, but like in anything else, there's outliers, right? And you don't want to have one of those ones that's to the far right of the industry standard when you're shopping for your M&A advisor. So make sure the costs are in line with what the industry standards are or below. Yeah.
It's awesome. So Alan, first off, just want to say it has been great having you on the show. I know you're coming back on the show as well. We have some surprises for the audience. So Alan, we'll be bringing him back on the show, and congrats again, new book. Come on. So excited to get this out, and we'll of course put the link to the book and everything else in the show okay. notes so that people can check it out. But Alan, just have to ask, I mean, a lot going on in your world. I mean, what's next? What's next for you? What's next for Pace?
Well, it's a rebranding here, book, podcasts through, again, Mission Matters Help, trying to take the business beyond my very loyal and robust referral network in the region. I want to start, creating, content marketing and releasing myself from my tethers to Western New York, where I can maybe, from any beach, anywhere, run a deal.
Oh, come on. That's exciting. Hey, maybe I'll get a chance to do that next too, and I won't have to wear the suit and tie. No, just playing for you.
You look good.
So speaking of the audience, if this is your first time watching Mission Matters or engaging with our platform, we're all about bringing out entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, why they do what they do, how they do what they do. Alan, if somebody's watching this and they want to connect and learn more about Pace and to connect with you and your team, I mean, what's the best way for them to do that?
Email me directly, probably Alan, A-L-A-N at pacemc.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put We'll put that in the show notes and also your LinkedIn link as well, so people can check you out and your background as well. And speaking of the audience, again, hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based entrepreneurs and executives just like Alan coming on, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Alan, really been a pleasure. Look forward to continuing working with you.
Same here, Adam. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a real pleasure.